welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. In the summer, many people are thinking about vacations, and it's easy to forget there's a humanitarian crisis in Ukraine's war zone. The International Committee for the Red Cross has been working to alleviate the crisis since it began. This week, we're bringing you an interview with the Ukrainian mission head, Mr. Alain Alichman, who previously served in Iraq, Israel, and Ethiopia. The interview was conducted by Hromadske Radio co-founder Andriy Kulikov.
3 years in Ukraine as head of the delegation of one of the most respected international organizations, one of the organizations that are symbols of humanitarian attitude towards each other. What are the major conclusions after the 3 years? What's been done and what's still to be done?
When we look at figures, a lot has been done. When we look at results, much more should be done. One of the characteristic of the humanitarian work is that you are never satisfied, because you always see that there is suffering and you are not able to alleviate it or diminish it. So,
do you actually see the suffering, Mr. Schliemann, or you are being told that people are suffering?
As myself, I am mainly based in the capital and traveling to Donetsk, Lugansk on a rather regular basis, but remaining in cities, it's clear that I am not exposed every day to suffering, and I base a lot of my work on report from my colleagues. But, for example, I was last week in a village called Jovanka, which is at contact line near Mayorsk. And there, when you speak with the people, when you see the living condition, when you see roofs which have been damaged, etc., you see this suffering. And very often when we speak with Babushka at the contact line, after a couple of minutes, they start crying. And very often they tell us, it's not so much what you bring us, which is important, but just your presence, and to show that we are not forgotten, that the world did not forget this crisis, and that you are coming on a regular basis. So it's a bit, I would say, the commonality of your humanitarian work, that you have always the impression that the glass is half empty, more than half full. But at the same time, again, we have to be aware of challenges. We have to be aware of the importance of needs, but also importance of achievement. Because I repeat, a lot has been done for the last 3 years by us, but also by other humanitarian organizations. We needed also to build a structure from scratch, because ICRC, we opened our office in February 2014, meaning before we had zero presence, and now we are all over the context 500, meaning around 100 expatriates and 400 Ukrainians. We have every day about 40 field trips at the contact line. We have a huge logistic. We have 5-6 offices plus the headquarter here, meaning a lot has been done and to be built. And when we speak of 400 Ukrainian colleagues, we need also to mention, the training which is going with it, also to have the people understanding what neutrality means, independence, not implication in political discussion, etc. So again, a lot has been done, but we always thinking that we must do more.
Compared to other countries, how big is the ICRC operation in Ukraine? Is it a normal size or is it of a bigger size?
It's a big size operation. We are the ninth largest worldwide. ICRC, we have around 90. We are present in around 90 countries in the world. So this is within the 10 largest operation.
When you first came to Ukraine, and I mean the ICRC as a whole, not you personally, but if you want, you may also answer from your personal point of view. Were you invited, were you solicited, or you came on your own initiative and you had to insist that you are present in Ukraine?
We can never come on our own, meaning when there are problems. Our common date is related to conflicts. and other situation of violence. So when a conflict erupts or internal violence erupts, we contact authorities and we propose what we call our services, first to establish an office and to be able to start activities. So we did this here. And then we had an expansion, but always coordinated with the concerned authorities.
Did you have to insist on your presence when you suggested that you come? Or the Ukrainian authorities were eager to have you and the people on the other side of the contact line?
I mean, the Ukraine context was a bit special for us because we were present in the past and we closed our office in 2012, meaning that we had a headquarter agreement in vigor. So this also facilitated a lot our presence or coming back. And I think we were there was a good understanding that we were useful and we did not have to insist too much on our presence. And then as the situation developed in a very unexpected way, I mean, first with Crimea, then with the East, we managed, yes, also to expand our presence. And at that time, there was also support from the local, the person in charge of different cities.
Mr. Schliemann, when you think of the future ahead and you say that we or you should do more, you always have this feeling, what are the major points and major fields that you feel your participation is needed even more?
I mean, the first issue I would mention is access to detainees. I mean, we have access to detainees held in Ukraine by the Ukrainian government. And there we could still improve, I mean, have it more systematic, in particular with detainees held by SBU, but we are visiting. This is a positive point. On the other side of the contact line, at this stage, we don't have access yet. So we are making a lot of efforts. We have some, I would say, positive prospects, but at this stage, this did not take place. We visited some detainees in the past, but not for the time being. So this is really one of our main priority. Then there are a lot of initiatives that we try to propose to all sides concerned to act as a neutral intermediary. Maybe you heard that we made some proposal with regard to facilitating the system of paying pension for pensioners who cannot move, I mean, being disabled or bedridden. So this also something maybe, and we are very aware of how complicated it is, but maybe we could also be useful. We also propose different initiatives with regard to the provision of water. When we can act as a neutral intermediary between sides, I think that we can do more. And then with regard to missing persons, I mean, this is also a very important file where we have been active for more or less since the beginning of the conflict. And last week, there was a great news with the adoption by the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine of a law on the missing, which I think is a great achievement for the country. There are very few countries in my mind who adopted such a law when a conflict is still ongoing, because very often it's adopted after the conflict, but it's important to have a system in place, a framework, as quickly as possible to deal with this issue. So this is also something where a lot has still to be done and where we will cooperate with the sides.
Mr. Schliemann, you mentioned that sometimes you have to explain the meaning of neutrality to Ukrainians. How do you feel, how Ukrainians are prepared to accept neutrality in such cases? How often they maybe even reproach you and your staff for being neutral?
I mean, I mentioned the issue of neutrality in the integration of our staff, because neutrality is not a given. Myself, I'm a Swiss. Maybe for a Swiss, it's a bit easier to understand neutrality because I come from a neutral country. But as individuals, we are always We have our own emotion, we have our own ideas, and this is normal. And the challenge is always that we must a bit forget what we think as persons and stick to the organization and this principle. Then, yes, a huge element is to disseminate, to communicate this element of neutrality and also to be perceived as neutral. And in this context, it's clear that it's highly politicized, highly polarized, and it's difficult for many people to understand that you can deal with all sides without taking position, only concentrating on human needs. But this needs to be constantly explained and again justified by acts. It's not just speeches, but by action that you have to be seen as totally objective, non-political and neutral.
In this respect, I suppose that you monitor what Ukrainian media reports about your mission. How satisfied you are with the way they view the ICRC mission?
Globally, I mean, at this stage, we can say that we are rather satisfied. So there are sometimes some negative articles or a bit biased, but it is more in the social media. I think from the journalists, there is a rather good understanding.
You also said that sometimes even your presence, and I mean your presence and the presence of your staff, your Ukrainian and expat colleagues, is even more important than what you bring. Still, what are you bringing to people in the conflict zone?
So we are bringing still a lot of support, and it's clear that type of activities in sometimes a bit different what we are doing on governmental side and non-controlled areas. But basically, we are trying to reinforce the capacities of the people to have the economic security. Sustainability. I mean, we are still distributing food, or in some areas it's cash. We are providing support for agricultural programs. In particular, I mean, this season it's very important. We are providing some support for livelihood programs. In some areas, also some support for small and medium business, for microeconomic initiatives. And in winter, we have programs to support the people to have some resources for heating. So this can be to improve the isolation of houses or providing some cash so that they can buy hard fuel, or providing directly hard fuel in some areas. It's clear that what we are doing is very different when you have a village which is isolated, or if it's in a smaller city where people have theoretically access to gas for heating and all these things. So this is one part. Another part is a strong support to the health system with a priority for war wounded. We are supporting hospitals who are receiving war wounded, but also support for chronic diseases as diabetes. And we have also a large program for non-communicable diseases where we are supporting about 100 ambulatories or health centers with drugs. Then we have a large program with regard to the provision of drinking water. This can be support to the large water companies, be it Voda Donbasa or Lugansk or Popasna Voda Canal, and also helping them to rehabilitate water station which had been affected damaged by the conflict, or water lines. We have also programs with regard to schools, where we are supporting schools close to the contact line with some material assistance, but also some passive protective measures. For example, providing a 3M to put on the windows, this type of activities, and also supporting teachers with courses on mine risk or first aid, and also some mental health and psychosocial support, meaning how to cope with the stress they have, but also with the stress of the pupils. In this also, this allows me also to expand, because in the three areas, first concerning mine risk, we have a large program in communities to draw attention to the population about the risk of mine, and also providing material to mark areas, but also to have signals that it's mined, and we are supporting also authorities with some advices or material concerning demining. We are not ourselves directly demining, but we are supporting this area.
How had you personally become involved with the International Red Cross?
I was a young lawyer, and then I thought, okay, I will go abroad, and I would like to work in this field of humanitarian action for a couple of years before going back to my own practice. And then I liked it very much, in particular the effect to help the people, but also to have to know rather deeply the culture and the specificity of a country, and this is probably, yes, a part which is rather unique in this type of work, that you need to fit with the realities, because you are not representing a state, you cannot impose anything, you have always to, I would say, to find agreements and to find consensus to implement programs.
So this couple of years transformed into how many?
Now it is 32 years. 31 years.
Okay, 31, 32, it's almost the same. And looking back over your history with the Red Cross, maybe this is not a right question to ask, but still, is Ukrainian situation one of the most complicated, or you've come across more more severe cases?
Me, I worked a lot during the Cold War, where we had a rather simple situation, I would say, provided you had the agreement to work. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, we had a new type of conflict, mainly conflict with a lot of actors, and we have seen that the number of armed actors increase incredibly in many contexts. If you take Afghanistan, if you take the Democratic Republic of Congo, Syria, Yemen. So this is some elements which are making nowadays conflict very, very complicated. The specific element in Ukraine is, yes, that it happens in a very developed country with all the consequences. It's also in a very urbanized area. In many countries, you have conflict which are more in the countryside. I mean, here it's really in the center of cities. And also we have this higher politicization. I mean, and what all this means. And I would say also the use of the new communication tools and new media, where it's also rather difficult to make your own opinion. Maybe in the past there were less information, and it was a bit easier to distinguish between wrong and right news.
When you go to Luhansk or Donetsk, what strikes you most, visually and otherwise?
I mean, visually we see that it's the same people, the same country. Yes, this is, I would say, the main element. In some conflict, you see big differences, but I mean, buildings are the same, the people are the same, and the network were very, I mean, were between both sides, and suddenly you have a separation, which is creating some difference and hardship for a lot of people.
Let's suggest that you're being told by your bosses, in Geneva or wherever the headquarters are situated. Alain, you've done a good job here. You're needed elsewhere. How much time would you need to go there and leave the operation here working as smoothly as it works when you're here?
I mean, in our system, theoretically, we should leave any time. But I mean, when we consider the situation, I mean, the situation, the context, and also I know a lot of people, and now how to run the operations. Probably, I would need 2-3 weeks of overlapping with somebody to replace me.
How experienced are usually people from ICRC when they come to another country? I suppose there was a case when you headed the mission or delegation to the country for the first time. What was your experience by that time?
I mean, we have a large pool of profession within ICR. ICRC is here. We have nearly 40 professions. We have water engineers, we have agronomists, we have some former journalists, etc., etc. So in management position, it's the same. I mean, your background is very different. And it's clear that you acquire more and more experience. It's very different. I mean, if you are running a delegation or an office with 5 people or 10 people, or if you have you are here, heading 500 people in Syria, imagine that we have 1,000. I mean, then it starts to be as companies, finally, even if for human purposes. So we have, yes, this you will acquire by experience.
Mr. Schliemann, you said that it's a good thing that the Ukrainian parliament has adopted the law on missing persons. You also mentioned that it's not every time that such laws are adopted during the conflict. Why do you think it is so important that you have to single it out?
I mean, usually in countries you don't have a law for a large number of missing. You will have a regulation in different body of laws for individual cases of missing, even if in the end the global number can be rather high. In a conflict or when you have a natural disaster, suddenly within a rather short period of time, you have a large number of people who are missing, and you need to adopt a set of measures in different areas. And you have also several ministries and institutions involved. And it's always a problem, a challenge of coordination. So here there were discussions rather early, and there was an awareness from the government, from parliamentarians, that a law had to be drafted to encompass all the aspects, to improve and speed the search for missings and identification of missing. So in this law, there is several very important measures. The first one is the establishment of a national commission, which will reunite the different institutions, ministries involved, and the composition, the organization is still to be decided upon by the cabinet of ministers. I mean, the law, you have the concept of the commission and the membership. A second very important element is a central registry, meaning that you can gather and have somewhere the list, the global list of missing persons. For the time being in Ukraine, nobody is able to give a precise figure of missing persons.
Is it ever possible?
Because also the information is scattered in different registers. So this will also help, even if probably you cannot claim to be exhaustive, but at least it will help to have this. And a third very important development is a commitment from the state to support families, because previously you had some families who got support, in particular families of missing military, but it was not for the whole missing. And with this is a commitment from the state to very early in the process to pay a type of pension for families. And so far, this is very very important. When you look at the needs of relatives of missing, you have material needs, but you have also legal, administrative, and psychosocial needs. And all this requires some holistic response. And there we have the start of this holistic response. So at the same time, it's clear that the problem of missing concern in the whole context also on non-governmental control areas. And it's important, yes, to have also, as ICRC, an organization who can connect between the sites and try also to improve the exchange of information between what is available on the other side and what is on the governmental side. So with this law, we really believe that it's a very important step forward for the issue of missing persons.
You believe, but how you will check whether your belief is true?
So on our side, we provided some advices in the drafting phase. We also had regular contact with the committee in charge of the introduction of the law to the RADA. And we will continue now to be in contact with the bodies in charge of proposing and adopting the executive regulation to implement the law. And I mean, we will see also in the future how the bodies and institutions, ministries work together. And we will monitor the whole, I would say, with a decrease of cases of missing persons based on the global number, I would say, to see step by step how it's going down. We have to be aware that the process is taking years. If we look, for example, the situation in Bosnia with the war which ended in 95, now it is 23 years after. And if I'm not mistaken, they still have 9,000 cases of missing persons. They had more than 20, they had about 20,000 at the time. But so we see it takes really a long period of time. And all this period of time is a lot of anxiety for the families who don't know what happened to the with their dear ones. A lot of, yes, psychological problems. I mentioned anxiety, but also trying to isolate themselves from others. And just be, I mean, if you have children, etc., imagine what you would feel if suddenly you don't have any news from your daughter or son, and okay, you could imagine that maybe they died, but at least you would like to have their body, you would like to have proper funerals. But as long as you have no information, you will believe that and firmly believe they are still alive. So, and if this situation lasts for years, and sometimes, as in this Bosnian case, for 22 years, so you can imagine what people feel. So it's why it's so important to have this legal framework, which should improve their work in this area.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. No pleasure. Thank you very much.
There's a new voice in Ukraine's music scene. A young woman from Kharkiv is calling herself Panika, which means panic. But her vocals are smooth. She's being compared to Alicia Keys. Her new mini-album features a song called Rozmova, which means conversation. Have a listen. Чи варто мати ці жарти в розмовах? Доцільна нотка просто ти, коли єднається два виміра, не хочу. Again next week, we'll bring you another topical in-depth interview and some music, so tune in. And we'll be very happy to receive any feedback from you. Follow us on Twitter, our handle is @CallingUkraine, or write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskiradio.org. This is Marta Dechok in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.